I am Dr. Deepa Matthews. This podcast is intended at undergraduate medical students to help them learn topics to prepare a little faster for their exams, to carry it along while you have your food, you can hear it while you travel, and ingrain it into your memory. These are very short segments, and it will cover almost all topics. I will be engaging almost all your five senses while I teach you these segments, and so you will be able to retain them for a long period of time, a little effort. So let's start with pleura. Pleura is a membrane. As you all know, it's a membrane made of a single layer of flat cells called mesothelium plus some amount of supportive connective tissue. Pleura has got two layers, the visceral pleura and the parietal pleura. The parietal pleura covers the thoracic wall, whereas the visceral pleura covers the lung. Now, if you can't imagine this, let's take a hypothetical pink balloon. This balloon is filled with some moldable substance, in the sense, you push your hand into it, the balloon will take the shape, I mean, incorporate your hand. You can push your hand deep into the balloon. It's not air or water, it's some moldable substance. So if you do like that, now your hand and the distal part of your forearm is inside this balloon. The layer of the balloon that covers your fist is a visceral pleura, and the one that is above that is a parietal pleura. This is exactly how it is in the lungs. In between these two pleura, there is a small space called pleural space. This contains very minimal amount of serous fluid normally. Now, certain other things that you can remember about parietal pleura, it has certain relations. The costal part is the pleura related to the parietal pleura related to the ribs and intercostal spaces. The diaphragmatic pleura is the part that is just lying above the diaphragm or attached, covering the diaphragm. Pleura covering the mediastinum is a mediastinal part. And there is a small amount of pleura jutting out above the first rib, and that is a dome of the pleura or pleural cupola, a cervical pleura. Now, the visceral pleura and the parietal pleura will join together in one continuous fashion at the hilum. Okay, at the hilum. So that is where, at the hilum, or hilum is the part where the structures from the mediastinum enter the lung, and that is where these two layers will become joined together or become a continuous one. Now, certain other points that you can keep it in your mind and write as extra points for exam regarding the recesses, pleural recesses. You have two, costo-mediastinal recess, where it occurs on each side, where costal pleura is opposed to mediastinal pleura. Costo-diaphragmatic recess, the largest and clinically most relevant one. It occurs in each pleural cavity between the costal pleura and the diaphragmatic pleura. Now, the purpose of these recesses is to incorporate the lung during a very forced inspiration. Pleura has several diseases associated with it, the most common one being pleural effusion. Pleural effusion is collection of fluid in the pleural space, and if this fluid is red in color, like it's blood, it's called hemothorax. If it's frank pus, it's called empyema. If it is full of fatty cells, triglycerides, it is chylothorax. So this is a variance. Whatever it is, there is fluid around the lung. The lung can't expand properly during inspiration. There will be shortness of breath, main symptom. Now, this pleural effusion, why is there a lot of fluid in this pleural space? And there are several causes. It could be due to an infection like pneumonia or tuberculosis, or it could be due to malignancy. In all these cases, what happens is a lot of inflammatory cells are there in the the outside the capillaries. Leaky capillaries will be there during infection. So many inflammatory cells and everything will go out of the capillary. So the oncotic pressure outside the capillary is very high. So it will draw the fluid out of the capillary. That is how you get the exudate in these kind of infections and malignancies. Okay, that is called an exudate. And there are certain other conditions like congestive heart failure, where because of the increased hydrostatic pressure in the capillaries, in congestive heart failure, there is back pressure. Okay, the output is less, cardiac output is less, ejection fraction is less. So back pressure is there on the pulmonary capillaries, and they will, inside the capillary, the pressure will be high, that will push the fluid out of the capillary and the fluid will get collected. That is the pathology in CHF. In certain other conditions like nephrosis or like cirrhosis and all, where protein production is affected, so less oncotic pressure inside the capillary, and that will also lead to fluid loss. Now in these two cases, that is CHF and cirrhosis and all, that the fluid that comes out is called a transudate. So there is a hell lot of difference between transudate and exudate. Now, to know what is it, whether it is a transudate or an exudate you're dealing with, you will have to do a thoracentesis. Thoracentesis is, you put a needle, you draw the fluid out, and you examine. You do several tests on that fluid and drain it. Fine, immediate drainage, that is thoracentesis. And in order to know whether we can do thoracentesis or not, we will have to do a lateral decubitus x-ray. Lateral decubitus x-ray, in that the patient is lying on one side, so the fluid will flow out. If it is not flowing out, it is not spreading out, that means it is loculated. Now once it is loculated, that means you cannot tap it. You cannot do a thoracentesis. You will have to do a thoracotomy. No, thoracostomy. Thoracostomy is inserting a chest tube, because there are, while inserting the chest tube, you can, you know, the destroy those septae or locules, okay, and you can drain all the fluid out. So if that doesn't work, if that fails, then you can go to thoracotomy, which is like the surgery part. You will thoracotomy is opening up the chest and then draining, okay. So once you draw out the fluid, now you got the fluid in your hands. Now you'll have to do a lot of tests on it. First, you'll have to differentiate if it is an exudate or a transudate. Now, what is the criteria for that? Light's criteria, it's important. Light's criteria says in that the LDH of the fluid. What is Light's criteria? In Light's criteria, LDH of the fluid, I mean this pleural cavity fluid, is more than 2/3 the upper limit of normal serum LDH. Pleural fluid protein, the ratio between pleural fluid protein and serum protein is more than 0.5, and the ratio between pleural fluid LDH, lactate dehydrogenase, and serum LDH, that ratio is more than 0.6. Okay, always pleural fluid comes above on as the numerator, okay, and the denominator is the serum. So first we look at the protein in the pleural fluid, and that ratio should be more than 0.5, and then comes the LDH, and that should be, so let's say LDH looks, you know, little more lactate dehydrogenase longer, so that is the value. Let's remember, like this protein is shorter, lactate dehydrogenase is longer, like the, you know, the word. So protein has a small value 0.5, and the other one has a bigger value 0.6. So in that way you can remember, in whatever it is, exudate, this will be greater than 0.5 and greater than 0.6. In transudate will be less, okay. So there are three things in Light's criteria. One is pleural fluid LDH is more than 2/3 the upper limit of normal serum LDH. Next is pleural fluid protein, the ratio of pleural fluid protein to serum protein is more than 0.5. Protein is smaller, so 0.5. The ratio of pleural fluid lactate dehydrogenase to serum lactate dehydrogenase is more than 0.6. See, LDH, lactate dehydrogenase is such a long word, so more than 0.6. That way you can remember the numbers. These are three things coming under Light's criteria. Then also you will have to do other tests like the total count, the differential count. Differential count is very helpful, because if you see a lot of if you see a lot of neutrophils, it could be pneumonia. If you find a lot of lymphocytes, it could be TB or it could be malignancy. If you find a lot of red cells, hemothorax, fine. You have to look for malignant cells, because if you see malignant cells, it is stage 4 cancer usually. Then you have to test whether there is adenosine deaminase in pleural fluid equals TB in most cases. Then you have to check for the glucose, the pH, the total protein, LDH, triglyceride, and also you have to give it for culture. Everything you give it for culture, gram stain, culture, okay? Also AFB, everything, fine? These are the tests that you do with this pleural fluid. So we talked about the symptoms, the signs, what you do, what investigation you do, and finally what all treatment processes are there. Like first you have to do thoracentesis. If it is loculated, thoracostomy, and then later on, if it's nothing is working, thoracotomy. Now, on examination, one thing that I will include in this segment, which I should have said earlier, regarding the examination of a patient who comes to you with pleural effusion. See, if he is not acutely short of breath, you can always, in your OP, in your clinic, if you examine that patient, if he is developing pleural effusion, what you need to do is, first you inspect respiratory system examination, everything can be done. Inspect the patient. Now, even if you do not do this in your clinics, you can write it for your exam. Inspection, chest movement will be decreased on the affected side. On palpation, you will find, on percussion, you will find stony dullness in the area of pleural effusion. Then on that side of pleural effusion, you will find stony dullness because it's fluid underneath. Then regarding auscultation, you will find that the breath sounds, vocal fremitus, and vocal resonance, everything is decreased because of the fluid. Everything is decreased. If it was air, it would have been hyper-resonant. If it was consolidation also, these sounds are carried better in solid, through solid. So even in that case, it will be increased. But in case of fluids, it is decreased. Okay. So on percussion, you will find stony dullness. Even when you do tactile vocal fremitus, tactile, by keeping your hand and you ask the patient to say 1, 2, 3, sensation, that fremitus that you feel, that will be less. Okay, tactile vocal fremitus will be less. Breath sounds, vocal auscultatory, vocal resonance, vocal fremitus, everything will be reduced on the affected side. These are the examination findings. Okay, also on auscultation, if the pleura is inflamed, you can hear the pleural rub. Okay, pleural rub, okay. Pleural rub is characteristic of pleural inflammation. So it is like in the textbooks, it has been given that it has a creaking or rubbing character. Like the sound, it will sound like a foot crunching through fresh fallen snow. And in some instances, can be felt with a palpating hand as well. So basically that is pleural rub, that creaking or rubbing character. Okay. Then other points regarding pleura, let's say about pleural biopsy and pleural aspiration. We have said all that. We have covered all that. I think that's much. Almost everything about pleural effusion and pleural inflammation. There are several other disorders associated with pleura, pleural tumors, everything is there. But for the time being, I think this much will be enough regarding pleura. Now, you can hear this segment over and over again. You can add points to it. But basically, whatever is basically necessary for you to appear for the exam, it's given here. So, bye and good luck.